follow their Artith, serve him as best they could, and Yadith would be pleased with them. Raythan stepped down from the podium, satisfied. He had only been preaching in K.E. for a few days, but the chapel was already so packed that people had to line up at the back once the seats were full. Only a few of the newcomers were actually interested in converting. Most came because Raythan himself was a novelty. However, they would return. They could tell themselves that they were only curious, that their interest had nothing to do with religion. But they would return. As Shudareth became more popular in K.E., the people at these first meetings would find themselves important by association. They would brag that they had discovered Shudareth long before their neighbors, and as a consequence, they would have to continue attending. Their pride, mixed with Raythan's powerful sermons, would override doubts, and soon they would find themselves swearing servitude to one of the Artiths. Raythan would have to call a new head Artith soon. He'd put off the decision for a time, waiting to see how the priests remaining in the chapel dealt with their tasks. Time was growing slim, however, and soon the local membership would be too great for Raythan to track and organize by himself, especially considering all of the planning and preaching he had to do. The people at the back were beginning to file out of the chapel. However, a sudden sound stopped them. Raythan looked up at the podium with surprise. The meeting was to have ended after this sermon, but someone thought differently. Delaf had decided to speak. The short, Aerilish man screamed his words with fiery energy. In barely a few seconds, the crowd grew hushed, most of the people sliding back into their seats. They had seen Delaf following Raythan, and most of them probably knew he was an Artith. But Delaf had never addressed them before. Now, however, he made himself impossible to ignore. He disobeyed all of the rules of public speaking. He didn't vary the loudness of his voice, nor did he look members of the audience in the eyes. He didn't maintain a stately, upright posture to appear in control. Instead, he hopped across the podium energetically, gesturing wildly. His face was covered with sweat. His eyes were wide and haunting. And they listened. They listened more acutely than they had to Raythan. They followed Delaf's insane jumps with their eyes, transfixed by his every unorthodox motion. Delaf's speech had a single theme: hatred of Elantris. Raythan could feel the audience's zeal growing. Delaf's passion worked like a catalyst, like a mold that spread uncontrollably once it found a dank place to grow. Soon the entire audience shared in his loathing, and they screamed along with his denunciations. Raythan watched with concern and, admittedly, jealousy. Unlike Raythan, Delaf hadn't been trained in the greatest schools of the East. However, the short priest had something Raythan lacked: passion. Raythan had always been a calculating man. He was organized, careful, and attentive to detail. Similar things in Shudareth, its standardized, orderly method of governing, along with its logical philosophy, were what had first attracted him to the priesthood. He had never doubted the church. Something so perfectly organized couldn't help but be right. Despite that loyalty, Raythan had never felt what Delaf now expressed. Raythan had no hatreds so severe that he wept, no loves so profound that he would risk everything in their name. He had always believed that he was the perfect follower of Yadith, that his lord needed level-headedness more than he needed unbridled ardor. Now, however, he wondered. Dilav had more power over this audience than Raythan ever had. Dilav's hatred of Elantris wasn't logical. It was irrational and feral, but they didn't care. Raythan could spend years explaining to them the benefits of Shudarath and never get the reaction they now expressed. Part of him scoffed, trying to convince himself that the power of Dilaf's words wouldn't last, that the passion of the moment would be lost in the mundanity of life. But another, more truthful part of him was simply envious. What was wrong with Raythan? That in 30 years of serving Yadath's kingdom, he had never once felt as Dilav seemed to at every moment. Eventually, the Artith fell silent. The room remained completely quiet for a long moment after Dilav's speech. Then they burst into discussion, excited, speaking as they began to trail from the chapel. Dilav stumbled off the podium and collapsed onto one of the pews near the front of the room. "That was well done," a voice noted from beside Raythan. Duke Telrai watched the sermons from a private booth at the side of the chapel. "Having the short man speak after yourself was a wonderful move, Raythan. I was worried when I saw people growing bored. The young priest refocused everyone's attention." Raythan hid his annoyance at Telrai's use of his name rather than his title. There would be time to change such disrespect at a later date. He also restrained himself from making a comment about the audience's supposed boredom during his sermon. "Dilaf is a rare young man," Raythan said instead. "There are two sides to every argument, Lord Telrai, the logical and the passionate. We have to make our attack from both directions if we are to be victorious." Telrai nodded. "So, my lord, have you considered my proposal?" Telrai hesitated for a moment, then nodded again. "It is tempting, Raythan, very tempting. I don't think there is any man in Arilon who could refuse it, let alone myself." "Good. I will contact Fjordan. We should be able to begin within the week." Telrai nodded, the birthmark on his neck looking like a large bruise in the shadows. Then, gesturing to his numerous attendants, the Duke made his way out the side door to the chapel, disappearing into the twilight. Raythan watched the door shut, then walked over to Dilaf, who was still sprawled on the pew. "That was unexpected, Artith," he said. "You should have spoken with me first."
"It was not planned, my lord," Dilaf explained. "I suddenly felt the need to speak. It was only done in your service, my Rodan."
"Of course," Raythan said, dissatisfied. Telrai was right. Dilaf's addition had been valuable. As much as Raythan wanted to reproach the Artith, he could not. He would be negligent in his service to Wyrn if he didn't use every tool at his command to convert the people of Arilon. And Dilaf had proven himself a very useful tool. Raythan would need the Artith to speak at later meetings. Once again, Dilaf had left him without many choices.
"Well, it is done," Raythan said with calculated dismissiveness. "And they appear to have liked it. Perhaps I will have you speak again sometime. However, you must remember your place, Artith. You are my Odiv. You do not act unless I specifically tell you. Is that understood?"
"Perfectly, my lord Raythan."
Raythan quietly shut the door to his personal chambers. Dilaf was not there. Raythan would never let him see what was about to take place. In this, Raythan could still feel superior to the young Aerilish priest.
Delaf would never rise to the highest ranks of the priesthood, for he could never do what Raythan was about to do, something known only to the Yorns and Wyrn. Raythan sat in his chair quietly, preparing himself. Only after a half hour of meditation did he feel controlled enough to act. Taking a measured breath, Raythan rose from his seat and moved to the large trunk in the corner of his room. It was topped with a stack of folded tapestries, carefully draped to obscure. Raythan moved the tapestries reverently, then reached beneath his shirt to pull forth the gold chain that encircled his neck. At the end of the chain was a small key. With this, he opened the trunk, revealing the contents. A small metal box. The box was about the size of 4 stacked books, and its weight rested heavily in Raythan's hands as he lifted it from the trunk. Its sides had been constructed of the best steel, and on its front was a small dial and several delicate levers. The mechanism had been designed by Svorden's finest locksmiths. Only Raythan and Wyrn knew the proper method of turning and twisting that would open the box. Raythan spun the dial and turned the levers in a pattern he had memorized soon after being appointed to the position of Yorn. The combination had never been written down. It would be a source of extreme embarrassment to Shudarath if anyone outside the inner priesthood discovered what was inside this box. The lock clicked, and Raythan pulled the top open with a firm hand. A small, glowing ball sat patiently inside. "You need me, my lord?" the Sion asked in a soft, feminine voice.
"Be quiet," Raythan ordered. "You know you are not to speak."
The ball of light bobbed submissively. It had been months since Raythan had last opened the box, but the Sion showed no signs of rebelliousness. The creatures, or whatever they were, seemed to be unfailingly obedient. The Sions had been Raythan's greatest shock upon his appointment to the rank of Yorn. Not that he had been surprised to find that the creatures were real, though many in the East dismissed Sions as Aeonic myths. Raythan had, by that time, been taught that there were things in the world that were not understood by normal people. The memories of his early years in Dakhor still caused him to shiver in fear. No, Raythan's surprise had come in discovering that Wyrn would consent to using heathen magics to further Yadath's empire. Wyrn himself had explained the necessity of using Sions, but it had taken years for Raythan to accept the idea. In the end, logic had swayed him. Just as it was sometimes necessary to speak in heathen languages to preach Yadath's empire, there were instances where the enemy's arts proved valuable. Of course, only those with the most self-control and holiness could use the Sions without being tainted. Yorns used them to contact Wyrn when in a far country, and they did so infrequently. Instantaneous communication across such distances was a resource worth the price. "Get me Wyrn," Raythan ordered. The Sion complied, hovering up a bit, questing with its abilities to seek out Wyrn's own hidden Sion, one attended at all times by a mute servant, whose only sacred duty was to watch over the creature. Raythan eyed the Sion as he waited. The Sion hovered patiently. It always appeared obedient. Indeed, the other Yorns didn't even seem to question the loyalty of the creatures. They claimed it was part of the Sion's magic to be faithful to their masters, even if those masters detested them. Raythan wasn't quite as certain. Sions could contact others of their kind, and they apparently didn't need half as much sleep as men. What did the Sions do while their masters slept? What secrets did they discuss? At one point, most of the nobility in Dúladel, Arilan, Teod, and even Jindo had kept Sions. During those days, how many state secrets had been witnessed, and perhaps gossiped about, by the unobtrusive floating balls? He shook his head. It was a good thing those days were past. Out of favor because of their association with fallen Elantris. Prevented from any further reproduction by the loss of Elantrian magics, the Sions were growing more and more rare. Once Fjordan conquered the West, Raythan doubted one would ever see Sions floating around freely again. His Sion began to drip like water, and then it formed into Wyrn's proud face. Noble, squarish features regarded Raythan. "I am here, my son," Wyrn's voice floated through the Sion. "Oh, great lord and master, Yadath anointed, and emperor in the light of his favor," Raythan said, bowing his head. "Speak on, my Odiv. I have a proposal involving one of the lords of Arilan, great one." Chapter 13. "This is it," Raoden exclaimed. "Galadin, get over here." The large doula set down his own book with raised eyebrows, then stood with his characteristic relaxed style and wandered over to Raoden. "What have you found, Sule?" Raoden pointed to the coverless book in front of him. He sat in the former Karathi church that had become their center of operations. Galadin, still determined to keep his small, book-filled study a secret, had insisted that they lug the necessary volumes up to the chapel rather than let anyone else into his sanctuary. "Sule, I can't read that," Galadin protested, looking down at the book. "It's written completely in Aeons." "That's what made me suspicious," Raoden said. "Can you read it?" Galadin asked. "No," Raoden said with a smile, "but I do have this." He reached down and pulled out a similar coverless volume, its cover pages stained with Elantris grime. "A dictionary of the Aeons." Galadin studied the first book with a critical eye. "Sule, I don't even recognize a tenth of the Aeons on this page. Do you have any idea how long it's going to take you to translate it?" Raoden shrugged. "It's better than searching for clues in those other books. Galadin, if I have to read one more word about the landscape of Fjordan, I'm going to be sick." Galadin grunted his agreement. Whoever had owned the books before the Riod must have been a geography scholar, for at least half of the volumes dealt with the topic. "You're sure this is the one we want?" Galadin asked. "I've had a little training in reading pure Aeon texts, my friend," Raoden said, pointing at an Aeon on the page near the beginning of the book. "This says Aeon Door." Galadin nodded. "All right, Sule. I don't envy you the task, however. Life would be much simpler if it hadn't taken your people so long to invent an alphabet. Kolo?" "The Aeons were an alphabet," Raoden said. "Just an incredibly complex one. This won't take as long as you think. My schooling should start to come back to me after a little while." "Sule, sometimes you're so optimistic, it's sickening. I suppose then we should cart these other books back to where we got them?" There was a measure of anxiety in Galadin's voice. The books were precious to him. It had taken Raoden a good hour of arguing to convince the doula to let him take off their covers, and he could see how much it bothered the larger man to have the books exposed to the slime and dirt of Elantris. "That should be all right," Raoden said. None of the other books were about Aeon Dor,
and while some of them were journals or other records that could hold clues, Riordan suspected that none of them would be as useful as the one in front of him, assuming he could translate it successfully. Gallatin nodded and began gathering up the books. Then he looked upward apprehensively as he heard a scraping sound from the roof. Gallatin was convinced that sooner or later the entire assemblage would collapse and inevitably fall on his shiny dark head. "Don't worry so much, Gallatin," Riordan said. "Mayair and Rhyile know what they're doing." Gallatin frowned. "No, they don't, Sule. I seem to recall that neither of them had any idea what to do before you pressed them into it." "I meant that they're competent." Riordan looked up with satisfaction. 6 days of working had completed a large portion of the roof. Marishi had devised a clay-like combination of wood scraps, soil, and the ever-prevalent Elantra sludge. This mixture, when added to the fallen support beams and some less rotted sections of cloth, had provided materials to make a ceiling that was, if not superior, at least adequate. Riordan smiled. The pain and hunger were always there, but things were going so well that he could almost forget the pain of his half-dozen bumps and cuts. Through the window to his right, he could see the newest member of his band, Lorene. The man worked in the large area beside the church that had probably once been a garden. According to Riordan's orders, and equipped with a newly fashioned pair of leather gloves, Lorene moved rocks and cleared away refuse, revealing the soft dirt underneath. "What good is that going to do?" Gallatin asked, following Riordan's gaze out the window. "You'll see," Riordan said with a secretive smile. Gallatin huffed as he picked up an armload of books and left the chapel. The doula had been right about one thing. They could not count on new Elantrians being thrown into the city as fast as Riordan had first anticipated. Before Lorene's arrival the day before, 5 solid days had passed without even a quiver from the city gates. Riordan had been very fortunate to find Marishi and the others in such a short period of time.
"Lord Spirit?" a hesitant voice asked.
Riordan looked up at the chapel's doorway to find an unfamiliar man waiting to be acknowledged. He was thin, with a stooped-over form and an air of practiced subservience. Riordan couldn't tell his age for certain. The Sheod tended to make everyone look much older than they really were. However, he had the feeling that this man's age was no illusion. If his head had held any hair, then it would have been white, and his skin had been long wrinkled before the Sheod took him. "Yes?" Riordan asked with interest. "What can I do for you?"
"My lord,"
the man began. "Go on," Riordan prodded.
"Well, your lordship, I've just heard some things, and I was wondering if I could join with you."
Riordan smiled, rising and walking over to the man. "Certainly you may join us. What have you heard?"
"Well,
the aged Elantrian fidgeted nervously.
"Some people on the streets say that those who follow you aren't as hungry. They say you have a secret that makes the pain go away. I've been in Elantris for nearly a year now, my lord, and my injuries are almost too much. I figured I could either give you a chance or go find myself a gutter and join the Hoed."
Riordan nodded, clasping the man on the shoulder. He could still feel his toe burning. He was growing used to the pain, but it was still there. It was accompanied by a gnawing from his stomach.
"I'm glad you came. What is your name?" "Kahar, my lord."
"All right then, Kahar. What did you do before the Sheod took you?" Kahar's eyes grew unfocused, as if his mind were traveling back to a time long ago.
"I was a cleaner of some sort, my lord. I think I washed streets.
Perfect. I've been waiting for one of your particular skill. Marishi, are you back there?
Yes, my lord,
the spindly artisan called from one of the rooms in the back. His head poked out a moment later.
By chance, did those traps you set up catch any of last night's rainfall?
Of course, my lord, Marishi said indignantly.
Good. Show Kehar here where the water is.
Certainly.
Marishi motioned for Kehar to follow.
What am I to do with water, my lord?
Kehar asked. It is time that we stopped living in filth, Kehar, Raoden said. This slime that covers Elantris can be cleaned off. I've seen a place where it was done. Take your time, and don't strain yourself. But clean this building inside and out. Scrape away every bit of slime, and wash off every hint of dirt.
Then you will show me the secret?
Kehar asked hopefully.
Trust me.
Kehar nodded, following Marishi from the room. Raoden's smile faded as the man left. He was finding that the most difficult part of leadership here in Elantris was maintaining the attitude of optimism that Galadin teased him about. These people, even the newcomers, were dangerously close to losing hope. They thought that they were damned, and assumed that nothing could save their souls from rotting away like Elantris itself. Raoden had to overcome years of conditioning, teamed with the ever-present forces of pain and hunger. He had never considered himself an overly cheerful person. Here in Elantris, however, Raoden found himself reacting to the air of despair with defiant optimism. The worse things got, the more determined he was to take it on without complaint. But the forced cheerfulness took its toll. He could feel the others, even Galadin, relying on him. Of all the people in Elantris, only Raoden couldn't let his pain show. The hunger gnawed at his chest like a horde of insects trying to escape from within, and the pain of several injuries beat at his resolve with merciless determination. He wasn't sure how long he would last. After barely a week and a half in Elantris, he was already in so much pain it was sometimes difficult to focus. How long would it be before he couldn't function at all? Or how long before he was reduced to the subhuman level of Sheor's men? One question was more frightening than them all. When he fell, how many people would fall with him? And yet he had to bear the weight. If he didn't accept the responsibility, no one else would. And these people would become slaves, either to their own agony or to the bullies on the streets. Elantris needed him. If it used him up, then so be it.
Lord Spirit, called a frantic voice.
Raoden looked as a worried sailor rushed into the room. The hook-nosed mercenary had fashioned a spear from a piece of only half-rotten wood and a sharp stone, and had taken to patrolling the area around the chapel. The man's scarred Elantrian face was wrinkled with concern.
"What is it, Saolin?" Raoden asked, alarmed.
The man was an experienced warrior and was not easily unsettled.
"A group of armed men coming this way, my lord. I counted 12 of them, and they are carrying steel weapons."
"Steel?" Raoden said. "In Elantris? I wasn't aware that there was any to be found."
"They're coming quickly, my lord," Saolin said. "What do we do? They're almost here."
"They are here," Raoden said, as a group of men forced their way through the chapel's open doorway. Saolin was right. Several carried steel weapons, though the blades were chipped and rusted. The group was a dark-eyed, unpleasant lot, and at their lead was a familiar figure, or at least familiar from a distance. Kehreta,
Raoden said. Lorien should have been hers the other day, but Raoden had stolen him. Apparently she had come to make a complaint. It had only been a matter of time. Raoden glanced toward Saelin, who was inching forward, as if anxious to try his makeshift spear. "Stand your ground, Saelin," Raoden commanded. Kaerita was completely bald, a gift from the Sheod, and she had been in the city long enough that her skin was beginning to wrinkle. However, she held herself with a proud face and determined eyes, the eyes of a person who hadn't given in to the pain, and who wasn't going to do so any time soon. She wore a dark outfit composed of torn leather. For Elantris, it was well made. Kaerita turned her head around the chapel, studying the new ceiling, then the members of Raoden's band, who had gathered outside the window to watch with apprehension. Marishi and Kahar stood immobile at the back of the room. Finally, Kaerita turned her gaze on Raoden. There was a tense pause. Eventually, Kaerita turned to one of her men. "Destroy the building, chase them out, and break some bones." She turned to leave. "I can get you into Iodin's palace," Raoden said quietly. Kaerita froze. "That is what you want, isn't it?" Raoden asked. "The Elantra city guards caught you in Kaerita. They won't suffer you forever. They burn Elantrians who escape too often. If you really want to get into the palace, I can take you there." "We'll never get out of the city," Kaerita said, turning skeptical eyes back on him. "They've doubled the guard recently. Something to do with looking good for a royal wedding. I haven't even been able to get out in a month." "I can get you out of the city, too," Raoden promised. Kaerita's eyes narrowed with suspicion. There was no talk of price. They both knew that Raoden could demand only one thing, to be left alone. "You're desperate," she finally concluded. "True, but I'm also an opportunist." Kaerita nodded slowly. "I will return at nightfall. You will deliver as promised, or my men will break the limbs of every person here and leave them to rot in their agony." "Understood." "Sule, I don't think this is a good idea," Raoden finished with a slight smile. "Yes, Galadin, I know." "Elantris is a big city," Galadin said. "There are plenty of places to hide that not even Kaerita could find us. She can't spread herself too thin, otherwise Sheor and Aendon will attack her. Kolo?" "Yes, but what then?" Raoden asked, trying the strength of a rope Marishi had fashioned from some rags. It seemed like it would hold his weight. "Kaerita wouldn't be able to find us, but neither would anyone else. People are finally beginning to realize we're here. If we move now, we'll never grow." Galadin looked pained. "Sule, do we have to grow? Do you have to start another gang? Aren't three warlords enough?" Raoden stopped, looking up at the large doula with concern. "Galadin, is that really what you think I am doing?" "I don't know, Sule." "I have no wish for power, Galadin," Raoden said flatly. "I am worried about life. Not just survival, Galadin. Life. These people are dead because they have given up, not because their hearts no longer beat. I am going to change that." "Sule, it's impossible." "So is getting Kaerita into Iodin's palace," Raoden said, pulling the rope into a coil around his arm. "I'll see you when I get back." "What is this?" Kayrita asked suspiciously.
It's the city well, Raoden explained, peering over the side of the stone lip. The well went deep, but he could hear water moving in the darkness below.
You expect us to swim out?
No, Raoden said, tying Marishi's rope to a rusted iron rod jutting from the well's side. We'll just let the current take us along, more like floating than swimming.
That's insane. That river runs underground. We'll drown.
We can't drown, Raoden said. As my friend Galadin is fond of saying,
already dead, Kolo?
Kayrita didn't look convinced. The Eridel River runs directly underneath Elantris, then continues on to Kaye, Raoden explained. It runs around the city and past the palace. All we have to do is let it drag us. I've already tried holding my breath. I went an entire half hour, and my lungs didn't even burn. Our blood doesn't flow anymore. So the only reason we need air is to talk.
This could destroy us both, Kayrita warned.
Raoden shrugged. The hunger would just take us in a few months anyway.
Kayrita smiled slightly.
All right, Spirit. You go first.
Gladly, Raoden said, not feeling glad about that particular fact at all. Still, it was his idea.
With a rueful shake of his head, Raoden swung over the side of the lip and began to lower himself. The rope ran out before he touched water, and so, taking a deep but ineffectual breath, he let go. He splashed into a shockingly cold river. The current threatened to pull him away, but he quickly grabbed hold of a rock and held himself steady, waiting for Kayrita. Her voice soon sounded in the darkness above.
Spirit, I'm here. You're about 10 feet above the river. You'll have to drop the rest of the way.
And then?
Then the river continues underground. I can feel it sucking me down right now. We'll just have to hope it's wide enough the entire distance. Otherwise, we'll end up as eternal subterranean plugs.
You could have mentioned that before I got down here, Kayrita said nervously.
However, a splash soon sounded, followed by a quiet groan that ended in a gurgle as something large was sucked past Raoden in the current. Muttering a prayer to merciful Domai, Raoden released the rock and let the river drag him beneath its unseen surface.
Raoden did indeed have to swim. The trick was to keep himself in the middle of the river, lest he be slammed against the rock tunnel's walls. He did his best as he moved in the blackness, using outspread arms to position himself. Fortunately, time had smoothed the rocks to the point that they bruised rather than sliced. An eternity passed in that silent underworld. It was as if he floated through darkness itself, unable to speak, completely alone. Perhaps this was what death would bring, his soul set adrift in an endless, lightless void. The current changed, pulling him upward. He moved his arms to brace himself against the stone roof, but they met no resistance. A short moment later, his head broke into open air, his wet face cold in the passing wind. He blinked uncertainly as the world focused, starlight and the occasional street lantern granting only dim illumination. It was enough to restore his orientation, and perhaps his sanity. He floated lethargically. The river grew wide after rising to the surface, and the current slowed considerably. He felt a form approach in the water, and he tried to speak, but his lungs were full. He only succeeded in vocalizing a loud, uncontrollable fit of coughing. A hand clamped around his mouth, cutting off his cough with a gurgle.
"Quiet, fool!" Kayrita hissed.
Raoden nodded, struggling to control his fit.
Perhaps he should have concentrated less on the theological metaphors of the trip, and more on keeping his mouth closed. Kerita released his mouth, but continued to hold on to his shoulder, keeping them together as they drifted past the city of Kei. Its shops were closed for the night, but an occasional guard patrolled the streets. The two continued to float in silence until they reached the northern edge of the city, where Iodine's castle-like palace rose in the night. Then, still not speaking, they swam to the shore beside the palace. The palace was a dark, sullen edifice, a manifestation of Iodine's one insecurity. Raoden's father was not often afraid. In fact, he was often belligerent when he should have been intelligently apprehensive. The trait had earned him wealth as a businessman trading with the Fjordal, but it had brought him failure as a king. In one thing only was Iodin paranoid: sleeping. The king was terrified that assassins would somehow sneak in and murder him as he slumbered. Raoden remembered well his father's irrational muttering on the subject each night before retiring. The worries of kingship had only made Iodin worse, causing him to outfit his already fortress-like house with a battalion of guards. The soldiers lived near Iodin's own quarters to facilitate quick response.
"All right," Kerita whispered, watching uncertainly as guards crossed on the battlements. "You got us out, now get us in."
Raoden nodded, trying to drain his sodden lungs as silently as possible, an act not accomplished without a fair bit of muffled retching.
"Try not to cough so much," Kerita advised. "You'll irritate your throat and make your chest sore, and then you'll spend eternity feeling like you have a cold."
Raoden groaned, pushing himself to his feet.
"We need to get to the west side," he said, his voice a croak.
Kerita nodded. She walked silently and quickly, much more so than Raoden could manage, like a person well acquainted with danger. Several times she put back her hand in warning, halting their progress just before a squad of guards appeared out of the darkness. Her aptitude gained them the western side of Iodin's palace without mishap, despite Raoden's lack of skill.
"Now what?" she asked quietly.
Raoden paused. A question now confronted him. Why did Kerita want access to the palace? From what Raoden had heard of her, she didn't seem like the type to exact revenge. She was brutal, but not vindictive. But what if he were wrong? What if she did want Iodin's blood?
"Well?" Kerita asked.
"I won't let her kill my father," he decided. "No matter how poor a king he is, I won't let her do that."
"You have to answer something for me first."
"Now?" she asked with annoyance. Raoden nodded. "I need to know why you want into the palace." She frowned in the darkness.
"You aren't in any position to make demands."
"Nor are you in any position to refuse them," Raoden said. "All I have to do is raise an alarm, and we'll both be taken by the guards."
Kerita waited quietly in the darkness, obviously debating whether or not he would do it.
"Look," Raoden said, "just tell me one thing. Do you intend to harm the king?"
Kerita met his eyes, then shook her head. "My quibble is not with him."
"Do I believe her or not?" Raoden thought. "Do I have a choice?" He reached over, pulling back a patch of bushes that abutted the wall. Then he threw his weight against one of the stones. The stone sank into the wall with a quiet grinding noise, and a section of ground fell away before them. Kerita raised her eyebrows. A secret passage? How quaint.
"Iodin is a paranoid sleeper," Raoden explained, crawling through the small space between ground and wall.
He had this passage installed to give him one last means of escape, should someone attack his palace. Kerita snorted as she followed him through the hole. I thought things like this only existed in children's tales. Iodin likes those tales quite a bit, Raoden said. The passage widened after a dozen feet, and Raoden felt along the wall until he found a lantern, complete with flint and steel. He kept the shield mostly closed, releasing only a sliver of light, but it was enough to reveal the narrow, dust-filled passage. You seem to have quite an extensive knowledge of the palace, Kerita observed. Raoden didn't answer, unable to think of a response that wasn't too revealing. His father had shown the passage to Raoden when he had barely been into his teenage years, and Raoden and his friends had found it an instant and irresistible attraction. Ignoring cautions that the passage was only for emergencies, Raoden and Lucal had spent hours playing inside of it. The passage seemed smaller now, of course. There was barely enough room for Raoden and Kerita to maneuver. Come, he said, holding the lantern aloft and inching sideways through the passageway. The trip to Iodin's rooms took less time than he remembered. It really wasn't much of a passage, despite what his imagination had claimed. It slanted upward to the second floor at a steep angle, heading straight to Iodin's room. This is it, Raoden said as they reached the end. Iodin should be in bed by now, and despite his paranoia, he is a deep sleeper. Perhaps the one causes the other. He slid open the door, which was hidden behind a tapestry in the royal sleeping chamber. Iodin's massive bed was dark and quiet, though the open window provided enough starlight to see that the king was, in fact, present. Raoden grew tense, eyeing Kerita. The woman, however, held to her word. She barely gave the slumbering king a passing glance as she moved through the room and into the outer hallway. Raoden sighed in quiet relief, following her with a less practiced gait of stealth. The darkened outer hallway connected Iodin's rooms with those of his guards. The right path led toward the guard barracks. The left led to a guard post, then the rest of the palace. Kerita turned away from this option, continuing down the right hallway to the barrack annex, her bare feet making no sound on the stone floor. Raoden followed her into the barracks, his nervousness returning. She had decided not to kill his father, but now she was sneaking into the most dangerous part of the palace. A single misplaced sound would wake dozens of soldiers. Fortunately, sneaking down a stone hallway didn't require much skill. Kerita quietly opened any doors in their path, leaving them open enough that Raoden didn't even have to move them to slip through. The dark hallway joined with another, this one lined with doors, the quarters of the lesser officers, as well as those guards allowed room to raise a family. Kerita picked a door. Inside was the single room allotted to a married guard's family. Starlight illuminated a bed by one wall, and a dresser beside the other. Raoden fidgeted anxiously, wondering if all this had been so Kerita could procure herself a sleeping guard's weapons. If so, she was insane. Of course, sneaking into a paranoid king's palace wasn't exactly a sign of mental stability. As Kerita moved into the room, Raoden realized that she couldn't have come to steal the guard's accoutrements. He wasn't there. The bed was empty, its sheets wrinkled with a slept-in look. Kerita stooped beside something that Raoden hadn't noticed at first. A mattress on the floor, occupied by a small lump that could only have been a sleeping child, its features and sex lost to Raoden in the darkness. Kerita knelt beside the child for a quiet moment,
Then she was done, motioning Raoden out of the room and closing the door behind her. Raoden raised his eyebrows questioningly, and Kaeratin nodded. They were ready to go. The escape was accomplished in the reverse order of the incursion. Raoden went first, sliding through the still open doors, and Kaerita followed, pulling them closed behind her. In all, Raoden was relieved at how easily the night was going. Or at least he was relieved right up to the moment when he slipped through the door to that final hallway, outside Iodin's chamber. A man stood on the other side of the door, his hand frozen in the act of reaching for the doorknob. He regarded them with a startled expression. Kaerita pushed past Raoden. She wrapped her arm around the man's neck, clamping his mouth closed in a smooth motion, then grabbed his wrist as he reached for the sword at his side. The man, however, was larger and stronger than Kaerita's weakened Elantrian form, and he broke her grip, blocking her leg with his own as she tried to trip him. "Stop!" Raoden snapped quietly, his hand held before him menacingly. Both of their eyes flickered at him in annoyance, but then they stopped struggling as they saw what he was doing. Raoden's finger moved through the air, an illuminated line appearing behind it. Raoden continued to write, curving and tracing, until he had finished a single character. Aeon Shio, the symbol for death. "If you move," Raoden said quietly, "you will die." The guard's eyes widened in horror. The Aeon sat glowing above his chest, casting harsh light on the otherwise collisionous room, throwing shadows across the walls. The character flashed, as they always did, then disappeared. However, the light had been enough to illuminate Raoden's black-spotted Elantrian face. "You know what we are."
"Merciful Domai," the man whispered.
"That Aeon will remain for the next hour," Raoden lied. "It will hang where I drew it, unseen, waiting for you to so much as quiver. If you do, it will destroy you. Do you understand?" The man didn't move, sweat beading on his terrified face. Raoden reached down and undid the man's sword belt, then tied the weapon around his own waist. "Come," Raoden said to Kaerita. The woman still squatted next to the wall where the guard had pushed her, regarding Raoden with an indecipherable look. "Come," Raoden repeated a bit more urgently. Kaerita nodded, regaining her composure. She pulled open the king's door, and the two of them vanished the way they had come. "He didn't recognize me," Kaerita said to herself, her voice amused, yet sorrowful. "Who?" Raoden asked. The two of them squatted in the doorway of a shop near the middle of Kaei, resting for a moment before continuing their trek back to Elantris. "That guard?" "He was my husband, during another life."
"Your husband?"
Kaerita nodded. "We lived together for 12 years, and now he's forgotten me." Raoden did some quick connecting of events.
"That means the room we entered."
"That was my daughter," Kaerita said. "I doubt anyone ever told her what happened to me. I just wanted her to know."
"You left her a note?"
"A note and a keepsake," Kaerita explained with a sad voice, though no tears could fall from her Elantrian eyes. "My necklace. I managed to sneak it past the priests a year ago. I wanted her to have it. I always intended to give it to her. They took me so quickly. I never said goodbye."
"I know," Raoden said, putting his arm around the woman comfortingly. "I know.
It takes them all from us. It takes everything, and leaves us with nothing." Her voice was laced with vehemence.
"As Domai wills.
How can you say that? She demanded harshly. How can you invoke his name after all that he has done to us?
I don't know, Raoden confessed, feeling inadequate. I just know we need to keep going, as everyone does. At least you got to see her again.
Yes, Kayrita said. Thank you. You have done me a great service this night, my prince.
Raoden froze. Yes, I know you. I lived in the palace for years with my husband, protecting your father and your family. I watched you from your childhood, Prince Raoden.
You knew all this time?
Not the entire time, Kayrita said, but for enough of it. Once I figured it out, I couldn't decide whether to hate you for being related to Iodine, or to be satisfied that justice took you as well.
And your decision?
Doesn't matter, Kayrita said, wiping her dry eyes by reflex. You fulfilled your bargain admirably. My people will leave you alone.
That's not enough, Kayrita, Raoden said, standing up. You would demand more beyond our bargain?
I demand nothing, Kayrita, Raoden said, offering his hand to help her to her feet. But you know who I am, and you can guess what I am trying to do.
You're like Aenden, Kayrita said. You think to lord over Elantris, as your father rules the rest of this cursed land.
People certainly are quick to judge me today, Raoden said with a wry smile. No, Kayrita. I don't want to lord over Elantris. But I do want to help it. I see a city full of people feeling sorry for themselves. A people resigned to seeing themselves as the rest of the world sees them. Elantris doesn't have to be the pit that it is.
How can you change that? Kayrita demanded. As long as food is scarce, the people will fight and destroy to sate their hunger.
Then we'll just have to fill them, Raoden said. Kayrita snorted. Raoden reached inside a pocket he had formed in his ragged clothing. Do you recognize this, Kayrita? He asked, showing her a small cloth pouch. It was empty, but he kept it as a reminder of his purpose. Kayrita's eyes blazed with desire.
It held food.
What kind?
It's one of the pouches of corn that is part of the sacrifice that comes with a new Elantrian, Kayrita said.
Not just corn, Kayrita, Raoden said, holding up a finger. Seed corn. Part of the ceremony requires that a grain offering be plantable.
Seed corn? Kayrita whispered.
I've been collecting it from the newcomers, Raoden explained. The rest of the offerings don't interest me. Only the corn. We can plant it, Kayrita. There aren't that many people in Elantris. It wouldn't be hard to feed them all. Goodness knows we have enough free time to work a garden or two.
Kayrita's eyes were wide with shock.
No one's ever tried that before, she said, dumbfounded.
I figured as much. It requires foresight, and the people of Elantris are too focused on their immediate hunger to worry about tomorrow. I intend to change that.
Kayrita looked up from the small pouch to Raoden's face.
Amazing, she mumbled.
Come on, Raoden said, tucking the pouch away, then hiding the stolen sword beneath his rags. We're almost to the gate.
How do you intend to get us back in?
Just watch.
As they walked, Kayrita paused beside a dark home.
What? Raoden asked.
Kayrita pointed. On the window, inside the glass, sat a loaf of bread. Suddenly, Raoden felt his own hunger stab sharply at his insides. He couldn't blame her,
Even in the palace, he'd been watching for something to swipe.
"We can't take that chance, Kerita," Raoden said. Kerita sighed.